Welcome to Winning Is Not Everything, where we bring sanity back to youth sports by focusing on character development, effort, and sportsmanship, not rankings and trophies, and conversations with some of your favorite athletes and coaches. I'm your host, Sean Jensen, former NFL reporter, children's book author, and youth sports coach. Today, we've got part two of three with Nate Burleson, who's thriving in life after playing in the NFL. But we're going to dive deeper into the challenges of his childhood and his journey to becoming comfortable being different and distinct. This episode is brought to you by All Over Media, which provides advertising solutions on mobile billboards and convenience stores in 200 markets across the country. Nate wanted to follow in the footsteps of his father and big brother, who both earned football scholarships to the University of Washington. He was so close until a new head coach pulled that scholarship offer from him. But Nate had watched how his parents dealt with setbacks, and Nate's approach is both funny and inspiring, a window into his determination and spirit. And though he's one of the most gifted and unique people I know, I was surprised and heartened to discover that the challenges to be himself weren't resolved in childhood or even by the time he graduated from college. Let's dive into part two of three with Nate Burleson. What were you ranked in high school, and did rankings matter to you?
I wasn't ranked in high school. The only time that I think I got any type of notoriety was I was named Seattle Athlete of the Year. That's because I was All-State in football, All-State in basketball, All-State in track. Now, I wasn't like a super standout, though. So it wasn't like any numbers jumped off the board. In football, I had 14 catches, but I turned seven of those into touchdowns. In basketball, I was All-State point. Didn't really turn the ball over, averaged around 14 and 8. And in track, I end up winning individually the hurdles. So they just saw me and was like, oh, this guy's a really good all-around athlete. And they would give out that award every year. So I wasn't on anybody's board. I mean, someone saw I was supposed to go to University of Washington where my dad went. And Coach Neuheisel, who came over from Colorado, he took over and basically pulled my scholarship off the table and was like, look, I know you were supposed to sign here in a couple of weeks and your father went here, but you can walk on because I have other recruits. And, like, that crushed me. Like, that's how much I wasn't on people's radar. I'm a local kid who's Seattle Athlete of the Year, and University of Washington, who gave my father and my brother scholarships, basically were like, nah, we don't want you. But I kind of just wiped my tears, and I went back in my room, and I picked my college in a very odd way that I wouldn't recommend. I went and I grabbed all of my recruitment letters, and I just counted who sent me the most. And I remember my dad saying, that's not how it works, man. Like, it's just the school that can spend the most on paper. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, yeah, but still, I feel like the ones that sent me the most gave me the most effort. That's how young I was. I was like 17, like a baby 17. And I counted, and Nevada sent me the most letters. And I basically met with them for a second time. And they were like, well, you had how many catches in the season? I'm like, oh, we're a running team. I had 16 catches. And they said, we'll give you that in one game. We passed the ball a lot. And sure enough, they fulfilled that. My junior year, I remember catching 19 balls in one game and ended up leading the nation in catches that year. But it's funny, as much as that hurt me, I'll fast forward just a little bit real quick. I was playing for the Minnesota Vikings in my third year. I'm playing against the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore, and we end up winning the game. And afterwards, I'm walking off the field, and somebody's like, Hey, Nate. And I'm like, is somebody talking to me? I don't really know anybody here in Baltimore. Hey, Burleson. And I turn around, this older white guy's walking towards me. And as I get closer, I have no idea who he is. And he's like, hey, how you doing? Rick Neuheisel. And I'm like, oh, wow. How you doing, man? He's like, hey, I just wanted to tell you, you should have been a Washington Husky. I messed that up. This was, if we can count, I don't know, 6-7 years later, which was crazy. Like, and I don't really think about it that much. And up to that point, it wasn't like heavy on my heart, but you know, I appreciated that though. Like, he didn't need to do that. He was an assistant coach for the Baltimore Ravens at the time. Like, for him to seek me out after the game and say that to me, he was like, look, your dad went there, your brother went there, so you should have been a Husky. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool, man. For somebody, I just, you know, when somebody can set their ego aside and say something like that, I just thought it was really cool, man. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Looking back, what was something you appreciated about your parents' influence on your athletic journey?
That they were always there. My mom and dad worked 2 full-time jobs. We're talking overtime. My dad worked at Associated Grocers, which provided groceries or housed groceries for grocery stores. He started driving a forklift like shortly after he got done playing in the CFL and then worked his way to behind the desk, you know, so many years later. We're talking 20, 30, 40 years later. And then my mom basically worked at the same type of place, but for dairy. So they just put together, boxed, and sent off dairy to grocery stores. I remember them being exhausted and working overtime and still being at games. I can't remember many games when my parents weren't there. And I'm sure there were, but majority of the time they were there. And I know now as a parent, they were tired, like really tired. And I appreciate that more than I can express to them. And and it's tough. And it's, you think about it, I'm saying this, but they have 4 boys who all played multiple sports. We all played 3 sports. And we all went to college. And these are 2 individuals, my dad from Sunnydale Projects in San Francisco, one of the most notorious projects at the time, and my mom from San Francisco as well. And they figured out a way to provide. And I do remember weeks where we just ate Top Ramen and me not thinking anything of it. Top Ramen and hot dogs, and thinking it was the greatest meal ever. Still to this day, I love Top Ramen because of that, probably. And days where we had to double up on our covers, thinking, we get to use more covers tonight. But now, as an adult, realizing the bill wasn't paid, so the heat was off. Like the journey that I now can appreciate as an adult means so much more to me. So their sacrifices became more significant as I understood what real life was as an adult and as a parent.
Now that you've got means and, you know, you're able to provide your kids a lot of benefits and things, what do you think was the magic of your childhood? Because like you said, I mean, what was it? What was that thing that kind of kept your family so close? And how did you not notice some of those things that maybe you didn't have?
I believe it was the dinner table. The dinner table, no matter what we were eating, we always seemed to eat dinner together. Whether the brothers were fighting, because you can imagine 4 boys in the house, we didn't always like each other. Even to keep it all the way real, even if my mom and dad were fighting and they didn't let us know, you know, whether they were arguing over bills, whether it was something personal, something within their relationship, like we didn't see it. Now, when I look back, yeah, I can pinpoint times where my mom would go on strike and she would say, I'm going on strike. And we kind of laugh. You got to imagine she's in a household filled with 5 boys, if you include my dad. And she and my cousin actually came up from San Francisco because he was living in bad circumstances. So sometimes 6 boys in the house, she was the only woman. So we drove her crazy. And she would go on a strike. She said, I'm going on strike. And literally would come home from work, go in the room and lock her door. And we were like wild animals, just rounding through the pantry. There's like food on the ground and we're fighting. Like it was like the Lord of the Flies, man. So but those moments in real time, we didn't know what they were going through. And like the resilience and the superhero mentality that they took on, because they took on all those bullets. Like they were bulletproof, whether it was the bullet of bills being paid, whether it was the bullet of drama within a relationship, whether it was the bullet of having to teach us about certain things or, you know, help us with our homework when they were dog tired. You know, they were bulletproof, man. They were superheroes and still are.
What was something you wrestled or struggled with when you were in middle or high school?
Well, just trying to find my identity. Like I said, I wasn't like a standout athletically, so people would see me and be like, oh, he's a athlete. I don't know if he's a good athlete. And being the middle child, you're trying to figure out who you are. And I think that actually turned me to who I am because I tried all these different things. Like I was willing to try theater and poetry, and I wanted to be an actor, and I wanted to be in plays. Whatever the school was doing, I wanted to be heavily involved in. because I saw my two older brothers, they were athletes, and I just thought, okay, what's going to make me different? So I would always try to find all these different avenues to get everybody's attention. Now that I look back, it was like me, like kind of like metaphorically, like waving at everybody, like, hey man, look at me, guys, I'm here too. And I think that was it. That was number one, struggling with my identity and who I was, and trying to be an individual in a household full of boys that have the same makeup. We all have the same genetic code. We look the same, talk the same, walk the same. We all have flat tops. So we look like the Wayans of Seattle. So it's like for me, I was trying to find out like where I fit in this group.
So Nate, you've got two TV jobs, you've got your clothing line. I mean, you're truly a renaissance man. How do you juggle all these things? And then also, you know, be a family man.
That was tough. When I moved out to New York, I was doing Good Morning Football, waking up at 4 a.m., which is the earliest I've ever woke up in my life, and then working a new job. So I was stressed because it was a new job. My clock was off. My body was hurting every day because I was waking up at 4 a.m., and then I would rush home and try to be a full-time father. I remember losing hair in my beard, like alopecia, like bald spots. Not like patches, small patches you can cover up. I'm talking about baby booty bald. And that happened in my face and in my head. And I remember going to a dermatologist, and she was like, okay, do you have alopecia, history of alopecia in your family? I'm like, nah. She's like, well, is there anything different in your life? I'm like, well, I moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. I have a new job. It fills me with anxiety because I just want to be really good at it. And I'm waking up at 4 a.m. She's like, well, that's it. You're stressed. You're losing hair because you're stressed, and your energy is just all bad. And your body is responding. Mm. And that's this defense mechanism. And I'm like, lady, I don't think you get what I did for my old job, but she's not a big football fan. So I'm like trying to explain to her in layman's terms. Like, so there's these dudes, right? They're like 250 pounds, and they would try to snap me in half when I would catch this ball. And she's like, oh, okay, I get it. Ha, ha, ha. You play football for a living. I'm like, yeah, I used to play football. Like, wouldn't you think that would stress me out? And she was like, well, how long did you play football? Like, I don't know, since I was eight or nine. And she said, well, you loved that. That's why it didn't stress you out. This is new to you. So it's foreign to your body. And anything foreign to your body, like a disease or a parasite, your body is going to have an adverse reaction. So at that point, I figured out a way to find balance, because every day I woke up, it was about my job. Every day I woke up, I was tired. Every day I went to sleep, I was thinking about how early I had to wake up. And then on the weekends where you think, oh, okay, you got Saturday to like relax. Saturdays were filled with me being at the gyms or at the football fields with my kids, but also preparing for Sunday. And then when Sunday came along, this was before I did CBS, when Sunday came along, I was sitting there with my laptop, my TV, my phone out, trying to watch all these different games and writing notes. Like, I was never even this stressed when I was playing on Sunday. And then I realized, all right, there's a better way to approach this. And I found that balance by really rediscovering how great the energy my family was providing. Because when you're, and Sean, you know this, when you're focused on a job and trying to do a task as best as you can do it, sometimes it forces you to put blinders on, whether you do it willingly or unwillingly.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that I had blinders on. So it's almost like I was deflecting the good energy that my family was providing me. So when I came home, I just started to plug back into them. I was like, you know, it's okay if I don't see every snap. I can see the highlights. It's okay if I come home and I'm not immediately thinking about next day's show. It's okay if I come home and I'm not thinking about how much sleep I didn't or am going to get. So once I plugged back into my family, you know, surprisingly, my hair started growing back in. And I realized, I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to have to do that in order to stay sane, especially if I'm going to have this many jobs.
Nate, you rap, you've got incredible swag and style. You're just so uniquely yourself. Where does that come from, Nate? I mean, that's such an incredible trait that you have, and something I admire about you. And it resonates in everything that you do. But how did you get to this point to be so comfortable in who you are as a unique individual?
I would have to say a lot of that has to do with my mom and dad, who would constantly tell me how valuable I am. And all these little things that make up who Nate Burleson is, they would constantly compliment. Even so much so when I was a rookie and I was playing with Randy Moss, my dad, he would say, "Hey, Nate, man, you know you're not Randy Moss, but you're just as good in your way. Like, you're just as good." And I would like laugh sometimes. I'm like, "Yeah, Dad, but I'm not Randy. Like, what are you talking about?" And he would, you know, I would call my mom and dad before every game, and he would say that. He'd say, "No, but when you're doing you, like, you're so great at it." And that always sat with me because, like, even now as an adult, I can't be anybody else. Like, there was an article that came out and said Nate's the next Michael Strahan. I can't be him. I won't be him. I refuse to be him. He has his own lane. I refuse to be Michael Irvin. I refuse to be Deion Sanders. I want to be the best Nate Burleson. And Nate Burleson is different. I'm very different. I see things different. I approach the world different. I talk different. The way I communicate is different. So if I'm so different, why conform? I think the worst space I could be in is trying to be like somebody else, because you're putting yourself in a prison. And I think with society and where we're at, Instagram and Twitter and social media just completely ruining a lot of young people, is they see something and then they try to be something. The best thing they could be is the best version of themselves, because we're all so uniquely made. And what they don't realize is you falling in line trying to copy somebody isn't going to make you stand out. On the contrary, it's actually going to make people not notice you. If you ever want to be seen, want to be heard, want to be felt, have an impact in this world, be the best version of you. I mean, all the way down to the most awkward detail. And if you do that, people are going to see you. Your light is going to shine bright. And that's what I realized at 38. Like, I don't even care. In the coolest of circles of people, I'm just going to do Nate Burleson. And what I realized is I always stand out, whether I'm trying or not. And I feel so comfortable in my own skin.
So you were 38 when you finally had that moment, Nate?
I believe I was around 35. I was retired for sure. It was about 3 years ago. So I spent 3 years working for the NFL Network in Culver City. And I was trying to be all these other guys. I was trying to be like the big brothers that are in the business that kind of taught me the game. You know, Deion, Michael Irvin, Marshall Faulk. You know, even Jalen Rose.
What was that moment then? What was that moment that allowed you to embrace your own uniqueness and not try to follow other people's paths?
It was right before I was offered the Good Morning Football job. And I just started to find comfort in who I was as a media personality. Michael Robinson and I would do podcasts. And our podcast was so chill, so relaxed. We just dressed how we wanted. We had music involved, and we interviewed celebrities, influencers, ball players, of course, and we got all these compliments, more than the compliments I would get when I was on TV in a suit. And that set with me, and I was like, whoa. So why every time we do a podcast, people say they love it and they appreciate it? But then when we do a segment on TV, when we're literally sweating and arguing and yelling about who's better on fourth down, and we're debating like every other sports show, people are like, "Oh, it was cool." Something about that was real to me. So I started to take those elements of who I was during the podcast, and I was slowly working into how I was on TV.
Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss part 3 of my talk with Nate Burleson. Winning is not everything, but the 3 H's to be a real hero in life are hustle, humility, and heart. I'm your host, Sean Jensen, and we'll see you again next time.